Welcome to On Par with Maury Povich. My guest today is a two-time NBA All-Star. He is an Olympic gold medalist, 13 NBA seasons, and probably established himself as one of the league's greatest rebounders to ever play the game. And many probably would think he's going into the Hall of Fame. But behind the stats, there's a story of reinvention, resilience, learning what it really means to show up for yourself. So today we're going on par with Andre Drummond of the Philadelphia 76ers.
How you doing?
I'm so happy you're here.
I'm so happy that I'm here. Like, I'm going to tell you a brief story. So when I first got here and I met you, I had to go to the bathroom. I had to, like, stand there and collect myself because this is a huge moment in my life.
Well, this
is huge. Like, I've watched your shows since I can remember.
Right.
So to be here in front of you and to be on your podcast is a dream come true.
Well,
I'm honored.
It's my honor. Believe me. But let me start out by asking you this, because I've talked to a lot of professional athletes in various sports, and all of them say these are hockey players, NFL players, and they all tell me the same thing. My show is always on in the locker room, and in the NFL, they would tell me the coaches were up top, ready for them to work out, and they won't come up until they find out who the father is.
Yes.
So is it an NBA training room too?
Well, at least when I came in the NBA, I wouldn't say so, but in high school, yes. Like, your show was on every single day. Anytime I came home, it was on. I feel like you took over TV. Like, no matter where you turned, like, Maury was being shown. And I'm a true fan, and I'm honored to be in your presence.
You. And by the way, one of your old pros loves the show, and that's Shaq.
Yes.
And Shaq told me that he and his buddies used to bet big money on whether they were the father.
I used to do that too, and I've lost a couple times.
Really?
Yeah, I've lost a few times.
But Shaq loves the show. And then one of my dreams is to get Shaq and Charles on together.
I'm sure you won't have a problem with that.
Well, I mean, to me, they're the best thing on sports TV.
I agree. Their dynamic on that channel is amazing.
Now, I know some basketball players get upset, particularly at Charles, because he critiques them. Would you mind that if he critiqued you?
For me, I mean, Charles has critiqued me before. You know, I've been in the league for 13 years, as you said, so Charles has had plenty of things to say about me. I don't look into it too much, more so that they want to see me do better. So I don't get frustrated by it.
That's an amazing response to criticism.
Of course. I mean, if somebody criticizes you, they want to see you do better, regardless if it comes from a hatred standpoint or a positive standpoint. They want to see you do better in whatever they feel you're lacking in. And it might be something that's out of reach too, but either way, I try to take it as a positive and try to be better with it.
So you're signed up again for next year with the Sixers, right?
I am.
Everybody was injured on that team this year.
Listen, it was injury bug was definitely alive for our team. And I don't want Philadelphia to lose hope in this team. I think our team is very well structured. I think we have the pieces to be very good. I think once everybody gets healthy and is able to play the full season, I think our team is going to be very scary.
So with Joel and Paul George and Maxey, and the other pieces, including you, I mean, there's enough there. That's what you're saying.
We have more than enough. We have more than enough to be a great team. I think it's just going to come down to health and how we approach our summer and how we're going to take care of our bodies and come back better than what we were the year before.
I want to go back with you because your story is an amazing one in several ways, and I'm going to touch on them. You grow up in Connecticut.
Right.
You're a kid. You're a good young basketball player in high school. And at the last minute, you decide to go to the University of Connecticut.
Correct.
Why?
You know, funny story about that. My best friend Mike, who you do know, works
for you. Mike is one of my former producers.
Yes, love Mike to death.
And he's supervising this show.
Indeed. And it's amazing that he's got me to be in the same room as you today, too. So shout out to Mike.
Right.
So funny story about that. So Mike and I decided that we were going to play my last year of high school together at Wilbraham and Munson. And Chris Dunn, who also played on our AAU team, was going to come along too. And I remember we went to a fair and we were having the time of our life. You know, school just ended, you know, it's getting ready to start the new year. I think we're supposed to go on campus in like 2 weeks. And I get a phone call from my family, and my mom's like, hey, you need to come home right now. We got to talk. So I'm like, what did I do? I feel like I've been good the past couple of weeks. I did my homework. Like I passed all my classes. So I get home, and Mike takes me back home, and like my house looks like the Godfather scene. Like the lights are dim, like my aunts, my uncles, everybody's inside the house.
Inside.
Yeah, and they're all waiting for me to come inside. So, you know, we all sit down and they're like, hey, listen, I know you plan on going back to high school, but we think it's better if you move on and go to college. So I'm like, well, I'm not ready to go yet. Like I'm still enjoying.
You're how old, 17, 18?
17, yeah, about to go on 18. And I'm still enjoying being a kid. I wasn't ready to go to college yet. I was getting ready to play with one of my best friends in the world because he went to a different high school than I did throughout high school.
But you got him to go to your
I did get him to go to my school, and then I ended up leaving him. So long story short, we decided that it was best that I went to college just because of my talent level and how easy it was for me to play at that level where I was at, so I needed to be challenged. So we decided, hey, listen, we're going to take the college route. So I'm saying, okay, now that we're going to college, where am I going? And that was the next thing. So we had every school in the country. I was the number one player in the nation. And obviously my mom, well, not obviously, but my mother did not want me to leave the state of Connecticut. So luckily for me, the team that we picked
See, it always happens, you know?
So the team, right.
It happened to Magic. You stay in state.
Stay in state. So right. They happened to just win the championship the year before. So it also was an easy call because the team was still, it was the same team coming back and it would just be an addition of me, right? So I said, okay, we're going to go to UConn.
Right.
So now.
With Jim Calhoun.
Right.
Now let me pick up the story because please. To me, this is to me a remarkable aspect of you in terms of a person. You go to Connecticut. They had all their scholarships taken.
Right.
And you're there, and you got to be on. You're a scholarship guy.
Right.
And they were going to take away a scholarship from one person and give it to you. And you said, no, my mother's going to take out a loan, and I will be a walk-on.
Right.
Why?
Honestly, Maury, I didn't have it in me to take somebody else's scholarship who earned it. Because I know what it's like to...
You knew the guy.
I did know him. DeAndre Daniels was one... I knew him after we got on campus. I didn't know him prior to declining the offer. DeAndre Daniels is one of my favorite players that I've played with throughout my career. He was my best friend on campus, and I still talk to him to this day. When they asked me, they said, hey, well, we can take a guy's scholarship, put him on financial aid, and you know, give you the scholarship. And I said, that just didn't sit right with me. I didn't want to take something from somebody who earned it. You know, so I said, you know what? I'm going to sacrifice and I'm going to have my mom take this loan out, which was very big for her at the time, and pay for my schooling in hopes that I do make it big and go to the NBA. And God willing, I was one of the first players in UConn history to leave after 1 year and
you
get drafted.
You were one and done.
One and done.
The first one and done at
Correct.
UConn.
Correct.
What did Calhoun think about that? Was he upset?
You know, I usually never tell this side of the story, but I'm going to tell you.
Good.
He wasn't happy. I remember sitting in his office when I told him, hey, I'm going to go to the draft. And Calhoun is very honest and straightforward. Like, the conversation we had was very productive, and he almost convinced me to stay. But I wanted to take a chance on myself and really better my family's life. That's all I was thinking about. I was like, I don't think my mom can take another year of taking this loan out. So I said, I have to take this chance at least and see where I go. I was already projected top five at the time. I ended up falling to 9.
Oh, so you were right. You knew that you were going to go pretty high.
For sure. For sure. Just based off raw talent. Like, I knew I was going to get drafted somewhere in the top 10 area. So I said, you know what? That's enough for me to leave school.
So that was 13 years ago.
Correct.
What was your rookie salary?
3.5, I believe.
Oh, was that much?
Yeah.
3.5.
Well, you got to think about taxes and everything else to go into.
No, so
that 3.5 drops down significantly.
But that's big money.
It is, definitely. For a kid that's never seen over $100,000 in their lifetime.
Right. You know, you talk about the money in the NBA now that we're on that subject. You have certain thoughts about the so-called max contracts.
Right.
Why? What's your problem?
I wouldn't say it's a problem. It's more so I'm happy. I'm grateful to see how much money is being brought in and seeing these players make a significant amount of money that
50 and 60 million
a year. It's insane to even think about. Like, it's almost like it's almost unheard of to see somebody make that much in 1 year that isn't like a business person. So the NBA is the best job in the world. Like, I never have anything negative to say about it. Just to be paid so well for a sport that you love and a job that you love, you know, you have no choice but to respect anybody that is in this field.
But you take a look at those big contracts and you say, is that too much?
It's never too much. I think players should get more. I think we sacrifice a lot.
Right.
I think players and coaches and everybody involved sacrifices so much for the greater good of the organization, which is to win a championship. Obviously, individually, you want to get better and, you know, do well individually. But I think as a collective and what the main goal is for an organization is to win a championship. So I think you should be paid for being good.
Meanwhile, I mean, I counted it up. I mean, you're over $150 million.
I'm doing well.
You did well.
I did well.
You did well.
I did well. Grateful. Shout out to Detroit. I played 8 long seasons with Detroit. I was drafted there. I'll forever be grateful for Detroit. Like, I still cheer for Detroit to this day. They're in the playoffs. And I get a lot of backlash, Maury, for cheering for Detroit because I don't play for them, right? And I guess it's basketball etiquette.
Oh, don't you think that most players, if they start out with one team for that long?
You would still support them, right?
Sure.
Right. But I even to this day, like last game they played, I was, you know, tweeting and making comments about how happy I am for Detroit.
Look, I'm sure Charles roots for the Sixers and the Suns, don't you think?
So why can't I?
Yeah.
So I never understood that, why I can't support a team that I played for, especially a team that's playing at a level that is amazing to see. They're playing great.
They hadn't won a playoff game in years.
Right. Even when I was there, we didn't win in the playoffs. So to see them win a playoff game, like, of course I feel like I'm a part of that because I've sweated and I've bled and I've grinded night in and night out for that name across my chest, the Pistons, and to see them win a game and play tough, it's an amazing experience, an amazing feeling for me.
Were you upset when they traded you?
I think that was one of the saddest moments in my career.
They traded you to the Bulls?
To Cleveland.
Oh, to Cleveland.
To Cleveland, yeah. That was definitely one of the saddest moments in my career, mainly because I was blindsided. Like, I felt like if I had a conversation about the decision, like, I would have took it a little bit better. I gave my life to Detroit. From the day I got drafted there, my goal, and I've said it from the beginning, was to try to win a championship there. And the way that things went down was it was sad. It was sad. And I still love Detroit to this day. I never will say anything negative about Detroit. Detroit is home. I still have a home in Detroit. I have family in Detroit still.
You think it was above the
It was above my pay grade.
Was it above the coach, above the GM?
You know what? To this day, I still don't know why that trade even happened. And I don't think anybody can really answer that question but them. And it's not my job to figure it out. I mean, everybody has a reason for why they do things. Again, I still have a lot of love for Detroit despite that happening.
You end up with the Bulls.
Right.
And I read a story. You, at some point, you had to take a break.
Yeah. And I actually enjoy talking about this topic.
You took a break. You said, I just can't play now, right now.
Right.
Why?
You know, Maury, playing in this profession, and I mean, you probably can attest to this too, just the walk of life of being somebody that is known.
Right.
And there's a lot that goes into it.
Yeah.
You tend to forget about yourself sometimes, being the person that is the light of every room. And I think for me, I suppressed a lot of emotions and traumas and things that went on in my past to the point where I got to a breaking point. And I was...
You were at the top of your game, by the way.
Yeah, I was playing very well for Chicago. And I just had a mental break one day, man. And I...
How did that manifest itself?
honestly,
physically, was it just?
It was physically and mentally. I remember sitting in the locker room, we were playing the Lakers, and it was right before the game, and I felt like I was just stuck in my seat. Like, I couldn't move. Like, I felt like heavy. Everything was heavy, and I just felt like an overwhelming feeling of just sadness. And I think it was my body and my mind telling me I needed to take a break and check in with myself.
So what'd you do?
So one of my favorite people in the world, I highly suggest, I don't like to push therapy on people, but I like to suggest it. Our team had a team therapist that was there, luckily enough for me.
They had a therapist.
They did, and I think the NBA has done a great job of implementing this into teams. And I think more teams should do it. Chicago happened to have this on their staff. And Dr. B, I know you hate when I do this every time I talk about it. I love you to death, and thank you for saving me. Just having a conversation with somebody who doesn't have a biased opinion or has any type of opinion of you was so helpful for me. And she was very beneficial for me and really shifting my mind in where I wanted to really take more time and worry about what Andre wants to do and not try to please everybody and stretch myself thin.
Were you ready to quit?
Never ready to quit, but I knew I needed some time away. I needed some time away from the game.
You got to tell your coach, or you got to tell your GM, or you got to tell somebody, right?
I mean, I was pretty open about it too when I had the breakdown. You know, everybody saw me, obviously not.
You mean in the locker room?
In the locker room, yeah.
I mean, you just were there, just paralyzed.
Yeah, just couldn't move, couldn't really speak, and everybody knew something was wrong. And you know, I shared with my team the next day, and I told the coach and staff, I said, "Hey, I need just like a day or two just to myself, just to recollect and refocus." And the support I got from them and the support I got from the city of Chicago and from nationwide and globally, just the support I got was insane. Just to see how many people do care about me and how I feel and what goes on in my mind, and that I am a real person. I'm not a robot, despite me being this entity of celebrity and the stardom that I pose. I am a human at the end of the day, and I do feel things, and I do go through things. And the fact that I was able to relate to so many people who also go through things, I took it upon myself to really walk that line of preaching, taking care of your mental health.
How long did you stay out?
I think I took two or three days off. I missed a game. I know I missed a game for sure, and I think I missed two practice days. And then, you know, I said, you know, I got to go back to work. I still have a day job. I can't let my team down, right?
Were you different?
Yeah, I went into it differently, mainly because I took the time to talk to somebody. Because as men, I'm sure you can relate to this, and anybody listening to this can relate to this. As men, we tend to suppress and keep everything to ourselves because we have to
macho image.
We got to walk around with this macho image, and we can't feel, we can't cry, we can't express what goes on in our days. And I think more men should do it.
Yeah.
It's okay to feel. It's okay to cry. It's okay to have emotions. It's okay to battle different things on a daily basis. It's okay to be a human.
Do you think any other players took your advice?
I think so. Honestly.
Well, some players had to. I mean, like Draymond, he was kind of forced to take a moment, right?
You know, I love Draymond to death. I actually have a personal relationship with Draymond. Draymond's one of the greatest guys I've met. I met Draymond earlier in my career before he got to the NBA. And the guy's a winner. Despite any of his antics or whatever he does on the floor, I would play with a guy like that 10 times out of 10, knowing that he will run through a wall for his team.
Even though he sometimes baffles you.
He does. You know, Draymond is a different guy, man. And even last night, you know, he has a lot of, I call it antics. He has a lot of antics that he does to really get his team fired up. I don't think he does it to irritate the other players, more so to amp his team up and give them that edge to battle through the rest of the game.
So I interviewed a guy who knew you, and he was kind of a whisperer to people. His name is Idan Ravim.
Oh, God, my guy.
I interviewed him.
Did you?
Yes.
Love
here,
Idan.
Right in your seat.
Wow, I got to call him after this.
What about him?
How do I explain Idan? He's always in the shadows. He's always in the shadows. Right. He doesn't like to be in the light. He doesn't care to be seen. He just cares about a product and what he puts into his work. And anytime that I feel like I need a pick-me-up or a guy to, like, light
up. You mean an actual physical train?
Yes. Yeah, he's a trainer, a basketball trainer.
Right.
So anytime I need, like, a pick-me-up or a guy to light a fire under me during my workouts, I go to that guy. I'm not into his personal life. I don't know what he does in that sense. But I know for a fact if I'm training with Edon Ravine, I'm going to be the best version of Andre Drummond.
Pop, 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 float.
He told me something that I couldn't believe. He says, none of my workouts last more than an hour.
No, but it's going to be the hardest hour that you've ever worked in your life.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I think Steph Curry said that to him once.
Yeah, there's nothing like an Edon Ravine workout. He will make you change your shirt 5 times. Like, you're going to sweat that much. Like, it's, and the thing that he does, too, it's not about how hard you're going. It's the repetition. Like, you're only doing short reps, but you want to make sure every one of them are perfect.
It's amazing about you and your longevity, because you weren't so full of yourself that you didn't voluntarily take pay cuts.
I wouldn't say voluntarily taking them. I think more so for the better of the team, I was willing to help add value, right? I'm all about winning. Obviously, you want to make as much money as you want in this business. That's the main goal, and why you're doing a lot of this stuff is to make a lot of money, win at the highest level, and be successful. But the main goal is to try to win a championship, and I've always said that from the beginning. I want to win. So sometimes you have to help your team bring players in to help you do that.
And you've done it.
I have. I mean, I've won. I've won. I've won a lot. I've won games in my career. I've won games in L.A., won games in Brooklyn, won games in Detroit. So I've played on good teams, but just waiting to get to that next level, that's all.
Are you amazed at LeBron at 40?
Yeah, I mean, LeBron James, he is the best player in our generation.
No question.
No question. I mean, the guy is still playing. Like, he is defying what prime is. Like, I don't know. The guy still plays. He's actually playing better than his 2016 year in Cleveland, which is insane. So the guy, his worth ethic, you know, I've got a chance to play with him and see what his life is like and what his regimen is when he is working out. And the dude works out like a champion day in and day out.
Do you know guys who've blown through their money?
Yeah. I mean, that's a sensitive topic, man. I think wealth management and the knowledge of what to do with your money needs to be implicated more into the NBA. And I think they've done a good job of that, too, of having a lot of people come in and speak to us and tell us about these different horror stories and how things go. I don't think it's as bad as it used to be. I think guys are starting to get it that no matter how much money you get, you can't lose it if you don't protect it.
Right. I mean, it's very interesting. My wife had a very famous interview one time with Michael Jordan.
Okay.
And it was when he was just coming back in the league, and it was a lot of stuff about gambling and things like that. Michael's answer to Connie when she asked him about, do you have a problem?
With gambling.
Yeah. Michael said, no, I have a problem. Well, what do you mean you don't have a problem? He said, as far as I'm concerned, it's just another form of competition.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Not to Michael.
Right. But speaking of interviewing, so for you, you were a talk show host for a very, very long time, and now you're transitioning to modern day talk showing in podcasting. So how was your transition from being in front of a TV screen and having the whole world see you to now moving to digital?
Well, first of all, digital's the future.
Right.
We're all on our phones.
Of course.
We all have all kinds of social media platforms that we, you know, watch and things.
Right.
I'm going back to an era in my life well before you were born. I mean, I was a journalist for 30 years doing traditional today type talk shows, not, you know, whether they're the father or not.
Right.
So I'm kind of going back to my roots, you know, and just trying to become a storyteller the way I always have been. I believe when I was doing lie detector tests or paternity tests, there was still a story to be told.
Right.
Each guest has their own story. Everything, all you do is try to bring out what is unique about someone.
So here's another thing for you. I am curious on like an in-depth level. What episode for you really was a life changer for you?
I'll tell you one that surprised me more than anything.
Okay.
There was a woman who was accusing a guy of being the father of her twins.
Right.
I open up the result. He's the father of one, but not the other.
How does that work?
Fraternal twins, not identical twins.
Wow.
The lady was obviously a little more active than she wanted.
The normal, right?
And there were two fathers.
That is insane.
I mean, I looked around with my staff. I baffled. Said, just like you. How can this happen? How can this happen?
Wow.
With fraternal twins.
That is a shocker for sure.
Yeah.
So I have to ask this question. The olive story. Can I please hear that story? Because
well, we did this show called Phobias.
Right.
And so we did a lot of crazy phobias. For instance, we would have somebody who was afraid of cotton balls.
Right.
And this we'd had an intern dress up in cotton and bring them out, and the woman went crazy.
Right.
We had a woman scared of pickles.
I remember the pickle episode, too.
This woman is scared of olives.
That's insane.
It has so many millions of views on Instagram and YouTube. It's just, and so, of course, we bring out a barrel of olives.
Right.
She's running all over the audience, scared to death. And then, of course, we take her backstage and introduce her to this guy who's going to fix the phobia.
Right.
And so later in the show, after that, he works for a couple of hours. We take a break. She comes back, and she's got the olive. She's okay with the olive. But I think she went back to being scared to death.
I can imagine. So those are an intense moment. So speaking of high intense moments, so like when people run off stage when they hear right. like bad news or good news, how do you get them to calm down and come back and like have that interview portion again?
Well, because you know, you had your therapists in basketball.
Right.
We have a psychologist there.
I love
and
that.
We're able to get the two of them together.
So how long does that normally take for them to like collect themselves and come back?
Oh, maybe 3 or 4 minutes.
Right.
I mean, it's okay. You know, I mean, I can't believe over the years the takeoffs
right.
on the show. I mean, it was just crazy.
Everybody was just running out.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was, everybody was doing it. Saturday Night Live was doing stuff and
right.
everything. And even Jimmy Kimmel was doing it one time. And he was accusing Matt Damon of being the father of it.
Right.
I mean, it was.
You're a pioneer, man. You're a pioneer, man. A lot of people follow after what you do.
You know what I'm most proud of?
Tell me.
The amount of hip hop and rap artists who have my name in their lyrics.
Of course. Of course. I mean, it's easy to say. So what is like your favorite or your most memorable personal achievement that you've had in your career?
Well, I think the craziest 5 years is in 86 to 91, I did a show called A Current Affair.
Right.
That was the craziest show in the world, and I had more fun doing it than anything else. But I think more than anything else, what I'm really proud of about the talk show is that we were on for so long.
Right.
I would have these guys come in, they'd be denying being the father of this child. We reveal that he is the father. What happens? I brought those families back 20 years later.
No way.
To find out, did he get involved with that child?
Right.
What did that how did that happen? Right. And a lot of times they did.
Nice.
And the child grew up and went to college.
That's amazing.
And so therefore, it basically reaffirmed what we were trying to do in the first place.
That's
because
beautiful.
You and I know two-parent homes
right.
with a child is better than a one-parent home.
Amen.
Don't you
Amen.
Think?
I agree.
So way back when I was doing these talk shows, kind of like now, interviewing all these people, the guy in the Washington Post was writing a review of the show and called me a Renaissance man because I knew a little bit
right.
about a lot of things.
Right.
And you're considered a Renaissance man.
Yeah. I know a little bit about everything. I try to expand my mind and learn different things. What challenges did you face? Because your show has been on for a long time.
30-some years.
So what challenges did you face, like, coming with new content all the time? Because I feel like it can get repetitive sometimes, but you've always found a way to stay relevant, have people and
exactly.
millions of people watch you.
Exactly. For instance, we used to do, one of the themes was, like, out-of-control teenagers.
Right.
You know? and I'd have these girls come on 13 and 14 years old and get pregnant
right.
because they want unconditional love and they think that having a child gives them unconditional right. love. And the audience is booing them and the girls would say, "You don't know me. You don't know me. You don't know me." And to run around. And then, of course, we either send them to boot camp or something
right.
or send them to prison to see what you how you can end up.
Scared straight.
Scared straight kind of stuff. And so, but each story was different a
right.
little bit. And so I just concentrated on bringing out that unique flavor in a story.
Do you remember your first episode?
No, but I'll tell you what I do remember, which set the whole pattern and pace. I'm being briefed for the first DNA test.
Right.
And the producer, and I've read all about the stories of the people coming on, and the producer says, "Okay, you got everything?" Yeah. And he says, "And the result is," and I said, "Nope, I don't want to know the result." I don't want to know anything more than my guests, my
right.
studio audience, my audience at home. I don't want to know anything more because I would skew the questions.
Right.
Like I know
oh, she
more.
Wanted to be surprised too.
That's where it came from.
Wow.
The whole inflection of you are the father. I'm as surprised as anybody.
So you guys heard it first. He is just as surprised. He had no idea. That
I had
is
no idea.
That's amazing.
Every lie detector test, no idea.
So those reactions that you have are real.
Absolutely. That's like people always say, you know, your guests aren't real. I said, they're damn real. Of course they're real. They're all
insane.
Real. It's part of the American fabric.
That's wild. So moving past, so what are some of the hobbies that you enjoy? Like, I know you like to play golf on par
yeah.
with Maury Povich. So I know golf is a big thing for you. Are you any good?
I was really good at one time. I mean, golfers don't want to say that, but I was good. I was almost a scratch golfer at one
nice.
Time. I made the United States Senior Amateur.
Amazing.
I made match play in the United States Senior Amateur. I played in three British Senior Amateurs.
Yeah, I'm not that good.
But one of the best athletes who's turned to be a golfer is Ray Allen.
Right.
Out of the University of Connecticut.
Indeed.
An NBA All-Star.
NBA legend, yes. NBA legend. One
By
of the
way,
best shooters ever.
One of the best three-pointer shooters.
One of the best shooters I've seen in my time besides Steph Curry was Ray Allen. No question. I mean,
corner three was.
Oh, it's money. Very high percentage, too.
By the way, I've always wondered, how do you get to be that good as a shooter? Because a lot of them didn't start out that good.
You're right. I mean, I'm not particularly known for shooting, but I know that guys, I mean, I shoot a lot of shots, too, but I think a lot of it's just natural ability, man. I think
there is no way.
I mean, there's
shoot.
A way. I mean,
is there a way to shoot a three?
There's repetition and there's form, obviously. And
I mean, is there a certain – you got to be in a certain thing.
A certain pocket. I don't know. I mean, it's amazing to watch some of these really good shooters shoot, and they all have the same thing. That release hand is always straight. It's always aiming towards the basket, and the jump shots are always beautiful.
I know some people who say it's ruined the game.
A three-point shot, yeah. I think it's changed the game drastically.
Well, it's changed your game.
It is.
You started out. This is the classic center, big man. Your back was always to the basket.
Basket, right.
And they don't teach that anymore, do they?
No, the game has drastically changed. I think after the Warriors started winning, they did that two-peat or three-peat it was. I think Steph Curry changed the style of basketball. The moment that he started like shooting a lot of those threes, I think teams took it upon themselves to change the way they play because now that they understand that shooting elbow jump shots and, you know, those mid-range jump shots aren't good shots because threes are more than twos. So they'd rather get up more threes and layups than twos and mid-range shots.
But it's always push the ball in and pass back.
Yeah. Yeah, getting those jump shots up. But I think for me, I've been able to stay with the times just because of natural gifts.
Are you still playing with your back to the basket?
Not as much, surprisingly. Like, I'll get a few post entries and I'll go finish, but more times than not, I'm on the move. I'm setting pick and rolls and diving to the rim, catching lobs, or just quick dribbles off the elbow to get to the rim.
Right.
So my game has actually changed over time too.
So you're playing with one of the MVPs of the league, Joel. Is he going to be okay?
I think Joel will be fine. I think he wants to play basketball. I think that's the biggest thing that people don't understand because of his injuries and how frequently he has been hurt. And it's something that's out of his control. Right. And I think he's doing the necessary things to get back into playing and he wants to be out there. So he can only do whatever his body allows him to do. Right. So He just finished doing surgery. I think he has, you know, a few weeks of recovery, and he'll start getting ready for back to play soon.
You've been great when it comes to philanthropy. You like to give to causes.
I do. I love to give back. So for the past 3 years, I started the Andre Drummond All-Stars camp, where on my birthday, I go back home to Middletown, Connecticut, and I do a basketball camp. And I could go out and party, or I could go do a dinner or something for my birthday, but I felt for myself, going back home and giving back felt so much better than doing something that was I can do on a regular day. So those are my forms of entertainment now. I love to give back. I love to stretch a hand out to the youth and really shed some light on things that right. I've learned over time that can help them progress a lot faster so they don't have to learn it later on in life.
I tell you, it gives me the best joy I have in life these days is being able to do things for other people.
Right.
And when I have one thing in common, Steph Curry has created a huge endowment for the Howard University golf team.
Nice.
And I've contributed.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's beautiful.
A lot to it.
That's
and,
beautiful.
It's interesting. I went to the University of Pennsylvania, right?
Right.
So I have a huge endowment there, but it's for only kids from Philadelphia.
Nice.
And I did the same thing in Washington with my high school. Only kids from the city, because I don't want these schools to get away from the town.
Speaking of Washington, so I've never been to Washington outside of playing. Like, what was it like growing up there?
You know,
because I always feel like it's kind of crazy. The White House is there. So much government. Like, what was it like being a kid in Washington, D.C.?
You'll understand this about being a kid. We grew up thinking, this is how we thought. First of all, there was no home rule in Washington.
Right.
So to us, the president of the United States was the mayor. Congress was the city council.
Love that.
That's how we thought of Washington, D.C.
Right.
If you grew up there.
Right.
It wasn't this. Oh, no. That's the mayor. And that's the Congress, that's the city council.
Right.
Little
do you know, this is like the leader of the free world. Right.
Exactly. That's how we grew up.
That is insane. So your dad was a journalist.
Yeah. 75 years.
Is that why you wanted to get into it?
Yeah. Yeah, I kind of learned it as a sports writer for the Washington Post.
What was that like?
It was great. Are you kidding? I went to more events.
I can only imagine.
Learned it as a knee. I mean, met every baseball player you could imagine. From Joe DiMaggio and Ted Williams.
Wow.
All those people. And I was a bat boy for the Washington Senators baseball team.
Nice.
I mean, I couldn't have had a better life.
I love that.
I was in the press box with him all the time. And that's how I kind of got into journalism, into TV.
So speaking of journalism, I just started a podcast.
I did.
I have two episodes. I'm two episodes in. And I love it. Like, I really, really enjoy doing it.
Can't you express yourself?
Yeah, I can express myself freely and say what I have to say, which is so awesome. And I'm going to start having guests soon. So for somebody who has guests, do you have any advice for an inspiring journalist to?
Very simple. You get them talking about something.
Right.
And instead of worrying about the next question, you bounce off what they're talking about.
Right.
You react to them. For instance, I had a hockey player here named Sean Avery for the New York Rangers.
Right.
He was the bad boy.
They got to fought all the time.
Yeah.
Guy I saw that
fought
podcast.
All
yeah,
the
yeah.
time. Okay. And he says, and I hate bullies. And I said, bullies?
Weren't you a bully?
You're the bully? So that's just reacting
right.
to what's being said. And that, to me, is the best interview. You know, when I say this all the time, when I know I've done a good job, the guest will say, wow, nobody ever asked me that.
Right.
Or, wow, that was so long ago. Where did you find that? You know, if a guest can say that to you, then you've done your job.
That's awesome.
Now, this will never happen to me. You're in the goddamn video game, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah.
You're in.
I'm making Maury play a video game.
I've never played a video game in my
ever?
Life. Ever. Not Nintendo. Not
even Tetris?
No, nothing.
What?
Not Pokemon.
Solitaire?
Nothing.
Chess?
No.
Wow.
Nothing.
I'll teach you a little bit.
But you're on YKN too. I mean, you're in the game.
I'm in the gaming. I actually just started. I've always played games, Maury. Like, I've always played a video game.
My son, by the way,
Does he?
Call of Duty.
I'm awful at it. I'm terrible. I refuse to play that game. I'm no good at it. It just moves too fast for me. I'd rather play 2K or I'll play Fortnite. But for me, gaming is an avenue to reach out to fans. Because I started streaming and I'm starting to get a little bit of traction on there too. And I'm starting to find out people are more interested in what I'm doing outside of basketball.
Well, good.
And it would be kind of cool if you did that too.
No, yeah. That's, yeah, but well, you know, it's tough to get away with what you're known for.
Right, right. You gotta stick to the day job.
But we're going to play.
We are going to play.
Yeah, yeah.
We are going to play.
But since the name of this thing is On Par.
Right.
When do you feel most on par, most aligned? When do you feel the best?
I try to feel the best every day. When I wake up, my plan is to be either good or great. Those are my two options. Could always be worse, right? So I always try to come up with a positive outlook. If something negative is happening, my friends can attest to it. If something negative is happening, I'm always going to find a way to find a silver lining or find something positive.
Turn it.
Right. And for me, I'm never too high or never too low. So I'm always feeling like I'm on par, I'm even. That's the best part about being on par. You're even.
Yeah.
You're right there. So I always try to keep a positive disposition because a lot of people do depend on me and see me. My energy is very strong. So if I do ever feel something like I'm feeling off, I will take a moment to myself and, you know, collect myself. Because we all go through things throughout the day where you need a moment to just refresh the mind and start over again.
Well, think about this. I guarantee you never thought that you would be entering 14 years in the NBA.
It's crazy to think about. It's crazy to think about.
Me thinking about my career, I mean, 14 years in the NBA, forget about my 60-some. That doesn't mean anything. 14 years in what I consider to be the most physically debilitating sport there is. Do you know how many old NBA player acquaintances of mine, knee replacements, hip replacements?
Right.
Shoulder replacements.
Luckily for me, I've been very blessed to not have any severe injuries or any type of injury of that sort. So I do a really good job of taking care of my body because I do know that that's a possibility that if I don't do the necessary things to keep my body at tip-top shape, it's a possibility that things like knees, ankles, shoulders, and even back becomes a factor and can slow you down and ultimately get you out of the league. So my health, my body health, you know, my conditioning, the strength piece, and everything that I put into my body in terms of eating, I try to take very seriously. Just for the fact that your body's a temple at the end of the day, and what you put into it is what you're going to get out of it. Going on 14 seasons now with no severe injuries is a testament to my team, my staff, you know, people that I work with to keep me at my playing edge.
Great. All right. We're going to the 19th hole. We're going to play a game, huh?
I'm ready. Okay, are you ready?
Let's go. Let's go.
All right, let's see.
It doesn't matter. Which any one you want.
I'll take this one. Looks
tall. Okay. And by the way, you got anything else to ask me?
You know, what would really go good right now is a drink.
Really?
What do you like to drink?
Well, it depends on what time of the day.
So it's about 1 o'clock. What time?
That would be, yeah, no. No, we'd probably go with margaritas or Bloody Marys or something like that.
Funny story with Bloody Marys. I had one going to an AAU trip. So I've always been tall, right?
Right.
So I may have been like 14, 15 years old, and I seen the person next to me order one.
Yeah.
At the time, I didn't know what that was. So I said, yeah, I'll take what he's having. And the lady brought it out, and I threw it up.
You threw it?
I threw it up, yep.
And then,
never drank a Bloody Mary since.
And then I'd say dinner time, it's always some scotch.
Scotch, what kind? Black Label?
How'd you know?
Did my research.
Black Label is it. And then at night, if things are really going, I got some Henny going.
Some Henny? Oh, nah. Henny's at like 11 midnight.
Oh, God, yeah. If I'm up.
If you're up.
If I'm up.
What's the normal sleep time for you?
I'm pretty early now, around 10-ish.
10?
Yeah, 10 to 6.
I wish.
Walk the dog.
What kind of dog do you have?
I have a golden retriever.
I have a Bernie Dude, a mountain dog.
Oh, you do?
I do. His name is Bob Marley.
Well, that's a... Oh, really?
I'm Jamaican, yeah, so I named Bob Marley.
Really?
What's your dog's name?
Well, here's it, okay? We're in New York, right?
Right.
My dog's name is Taxi.
Taxi.
Yes.
Very fitting.
Yeah.
Very fitting. Very fitting.
And he's got a black and white collar, too.
I love that. I think you should go first. Let's see what you got.
Oh, God. I don't mind. Let me just see here. Oh, shit.
Jordan.
Wait
a
second. Wait a second. Hold that.
Everybody gets a mulligan.
Come on. Bullshit.
Bunker.
Bunker. Jesus, I did it the other day. It was all right.
Let's see.
Any hole.
I'm right there with you.
All right, one more. One more.
Nice. Somebody's got to make it. We can't leave like
ball
this.
Right. All right,
I got this.
Hit another.
He gave you nice read.
There it is.
Here you go, baby.
Boom.
Boom.
Nice.
Winner, winner.
All right, what's
yeah! Winner. Winner. I've never felt so tall.
Yeah.
You know, you get around tall people, everybody. You stand up tall because if you're like this, you're screwed.
If you've had as much fun as I did, make sure you subscribe to On Par with Maury Povich on YouTube and tap that little bell so you don't miss a thing. And if you like to listen on the go, we're on Apple, Spotify, everywhere you get your podcast. Hit that follow button. I'll be back with more before you know it. On Par with Me, Maury Povich, is brought to you by Mopo Productions, A Better Life Media, and Radley Studios. With executive producers, me, Maury Povich, Holly J. Mirabella, and Christian Thompson. Supervising producer, Mike Bournazian. And directed by Mark Leibowitz.